welcome to Addressing Alaskans, a program capturing community conversations in South Central Alaska. Join us each week on KSKA as we travel to different spots throughout our community and listen to local groups gather to discuss what matters to Alaskans. This week, Chugach Electric, Matanuska Electric Association, and Municipal Light and Power participate in a panel discussion on powering South Central Alaska in 2011. The Anchorage Chamber of Commerce hosted the forum at the Denina Center in Anchorage on Monday, October 25th.
Matanuska Electric Association, Municipal Light and Power, and Chugach Electric Association are South Central Alaska's leading electrical utilities. Today, representatives from all three are here to discuss what efforts are being made to keep the juice flowing. First up, we have Phil Steyer from Chugach Electric Association. Following Phil will be Jim Posey from MLNP, and batting cleanup will be Joe Griffith of Matanuska Electric Association. Ladies and gentlemen, please help me in welcome our first presenter, Phil Steyer.
Well, thank you. Thank you all for giving up some of your valuable time to hear what we have to say today. As advertised, I work for Chugach. Chugach is an electric utility that's vertically integrated. We make it, we move it, we sell it. So when you look at the make it part of our business and you break it down, you find that about 90% of the kilowatt hours we sell in a given year come by burning natural gas. The other 10% from hydro projects. Customers are very sensitive to the price of natural gas. If you look at, say, the last 17 years of business for Chugach, as measured by the monthly bill we send our residential customers, you can see that pretty much everything other than gas, we've done a good job at holding the line on in terms of expense. And it's the price of natural gas that has caused your bill to rise from around $65 in 1993 to closer to $100 today. So if you wonder why is that, it's very much the cost of natural gas. So are we on gas forever? Well, not necessarily. The Chugach Board has adopted a long-range strategic vision of moving from where we are today with a portfolio that's 90-10, 90% fossil fuel fired, 10% renewable alternative, to flipping those ratios around over time. Now, you notice I cleverly have no dates on here, and that's okay. What's not okay is to not have a sense of where you want to go. And this is the corporate vision for Chugach, is over a period of time, migrate from not only reliance on fossil fuel in general, but really arguably over-reliance upon a single fossil fuel, to a portfolio that's somewhat different. Now, here's the way I would encourage you to look at this timeline. Think of it as short, mid, long term, and we'll talk about where we're at in action steps on a timeline like that. So where are we? What is the short-term strategy? Well, the short-term strategy says secure a source of natural gas, because frankly, we are going to be a gas-fired utility for some period of time to come. So in that regard, how are we doing? Well, we have a new contract with Conoco. We have a new contract with Marathon. So we have secured gas supplies for at least the next few years and perhaps a little more. There are gas storage agreements currently before the Regulatory Commission of Alaska, and that's a very positive turn of events. Essentially, gas storage takes a depleted reservoir, allows you to put gas into it when it's available, usually summer months, and extract it when you need it most, which is generally winter months. And a gas storage facility for utilities is something that certainly has been needed for some period of time, and there have been some very definitive steps to achieve that in the very near future. Last year, Joe and Jim and my own utilities commissioned and completed a study of natural gas reserves in Cook Inlet. And you may think, well, didn't the state just do that? And it's true that the state did basically an assessment of, is there gas left in the inlet? And they concluded, you know, perhaps another 10 years of gas is available. This study went beyond that. It went an extra step, and it quantified the drilling activity that's necessary to ensure continued production over that 10-year window. And basically what it indicated is a lot of successful wells will need to be drilled, around 180, as I recall, over that 10-year period. So it's not an end in itself, but it helps provide a roadmap for managers, and here I would say insert state of Alaska as a default, in looking at the activity in the inlet to try and measure, are we keeping up? Are we doing what we need to do? And we've all heard, well, there needs to be drilling activity, and it sort of begs the question, well, how much? And the answer is, we need, you know, a dozen or more successful wells each year over a sustained period of time to meet projected utility demand. And that doesn't take into account other potential uses for that gas. We're talking about utility demand. So the PRA study was a very helpful tool. It's certainly not an end in itself, but it helped quantify what we need. And then last year, you know, it's not that the legislature is not aware of this developing situation, this potential problem if we don't keep up. And the legislature also, I commend them for taking steps to do what they can through the incentives that are available to them to incent additional drilling and gas storage and other things in the inlet. And that's a positive turn of events. Again, all of those think of as short term on my timeline here. So those are down here. Midterm, what are we going to do? Well, midterm says, if you're going to use gas, use it as efficiently as you can. And to that end, Chugach and Municipal Light and Power have a construction project underway where we're building a brand new gas-fired power plant. And you might think, well, why would you build a gas-fired power plant? Well, that's the technology we know, it's what's available, and really at the end of the day, it's the most economical for us. And frankly, we would not be building a gas-fired power plant if we didn't believe we would have a source of gas for it. The new power plant will make very efficient conversion of gas into electricity, and I'll talk about that a little more on a future slide. And then, is there a place for renewables? And the answer is certainly. Not renewables at any cost, but renewables, at least from the Chugach perspective, renewables as they make economic sense for customers. So in other words, the conditions and the price of that are certainly relevant to whether or not they get incorporated at all, and at what point on that timeline they get incorporated. And then lastly, long-term, well, what's the long-term future? And I will tell you that from Chugach's perspective, if you want to make a long-term dent in the amount of natural gas we burn and substitute something else, that something else is probably hydro. It has a lot of natural advantages. There are plenty of other technologies out there that people are talking to us in the renewable field. Landfill gas, waste to energy, geothermal, wind certainly. All of those can have a place, but really hydro is something that's very, very attractive to us long term. So, as you heard Bill announce, part of this is about gas. You'd like to know where are we, and here's where we are today. In 2010, on my chart, if I can read my chart, BRP stands for the Beluga River Producers. These are our legacy gas providers across the inlet at Beluga and our contract from Marathon Oil Company, again, inlet-based production. And that's where we're at right now, and we're in the process of using up most of that stuff this year. And one of the interesting things, if you look at our gas contract situation, is we used to have legacy contracts that were for very large volumes of gas used over long periods of time, 20 or more years. So we knew, you know, we did that long-term utility planning that's so comfortable to us, that over-the-horizon stuff, and we could look out there and know for 20 years we had a source of gas and plan accordingly. Well, those days are gone, I believe, in terms of gas contracts. So we're about to use up the last of those legacy contract volumes in the near future. Already this year, we've got some replacement from our new Conoco contract. By the time we get into next year, we do use up the last of the Beluga gas. Then we have our new Conoco contract and our new contract with Marathon Alaska Production kicks in. And that's the picture then for the next few years. And I actually have optimistically represented on this slide a place that we're not quite at yet with Marathon, and that is we have a couple of options for in our gas contract with them for extensions into the end of 2013 and through the year 2014. I've represented them on here as the top of the chart because we have some confidence that we'll be able to get there, but in fairness, we're not there today, but I believe we will get there. And then we get out to 2015, and what do we look like? And you can see where we're at in terms of met needs, and now we begin to get this, you know, uncomfortable unmet needs. And it's uncomfortable mostly based upon where we have been historically. And that's because we've had these long-term, 20-some years worth of volumes lined up, and that's just not the situation anymore. For us, the future looks like gas contracts of shorter duration and higher prices. So it is an evolving situation, but we do have gas secured for the next several years. I said I'd talk a little more about the South Central Power Project. This is the joint project we're doing with Municipal Light and Power. It's a 70% Chugach, 30% MLNP. Here's the total, 183 megawatt project. Here's how that breaks out mathematically. It's got a budget of $369. That is also split by those same proportions. So Chugach's share, for instance, is $256 million. This will use 75% of the gas to make a kilowatt hour compared to what we do today. So I tell people this is kind of like we're trading in our 1978 Mercury Marquis for a Honda Accord manufactured today. It's that sort of thing. You know, if we're going to continue to burn gas for the foreseeable future, let's at least do it as efficiently as we can. And that will translate into millions of dollars a year in avoided fuel costs not paid by customers compared with today's technology. And the technology for this is combined cycle. That's where you take a gas turbine and rather than venting the 800 and some degree exhaust to the open air, you deflect it into a boiler, turn water into steam. The steam pushes against the blades of a steam turbine and you can make additional electricity with no additional fuel cost. And that is very efficient technology. It's actually technology that's been around for a long time. Chugach has this today. Municipal Light and Power has this today, but the new machines are more efficient than the old machines. It's a two-year construction project next year and the year after, and then this project is online by 2013. And to give you some idea, where is this? This would be Minnesota, and this is International, and this is our headquarters campus, and we're building it on a piece of vacant land at our headquarters campus. And that's what that piece of vacant land looks like today. The site has been prepared. This is about a 14-acre pad out there, of which about 11 acres, as I recall, will be consumed by the power plant construction. Now, also on today's list of things to talk about, as advertised by JJ and Bill announced, where are we in terms of this gas contingency planning effort that you've heard so much about in the last couple years, and what's that all about? Well, this is a one-page overview of that situation, and you've heard people say for some years now, oh gosh, you know, we have a gas problem. And when you really get into that and break it out, there are two halves of the gas issue. There's gas supply and there's gas delivery, and if you were to really drill down into it, you would find what we have mostly is a gas delivery concern. Let me say it that way. And that really has to do with, can you get the amount of gas you need at the point in time at which you need it on behalf of customers? And so far we have. But sometimes things can happen. And so I know you can't read all of this. I just want to assure you we do have a plan. We do have a one-page diagram. If you care, you can find this at Chugach's website and perhaps others as well. But basically what this does is not every gas situation is the same. You know, it could be a cold, dark winter night. Could be something happens with a production platform in the middle of the inlet. Could be oh my gosh, the inlet's running out of gas. And all of those things you've heard talked about, short term, mid term, long term, is where we plug those things in. This is something, could be hours or days, this could be weeks or months, and this could be a years long thing. So somebody says, hey, it's a cold, dark winter night, are we gonna have enough gas? Look at the short term column. Somebody says, hey, the inlet's running out of gas, that's over here. So for today, I'm gonna talk about this column because it's what's most relevant as we head into another winter. And those are the vertical columns. And then the rows here really are broken into these three things: system operations, voluntary actions, and interruptions. And the way this works is there's a whole bunch of stuff that we, and that's sort of the collective, NSTAR, Chugach, MLNP, gas producers, LNG plant, a whole bunch of stuff that we and others as system operators can do to respond to a situation. I know you can't read this, but for instance, it says we can make more power with hydro. We can load up a transmission line heavier than we might otherwise do to move power into a region. We can quit selling power to Golden Valley and Fairbanks that we make with gas here. And oh, by the way, we could start buying power over that same power line that they make by burning liquids and all. And again, that would be to respond to a short-term situation. And then a real key one on here is the LNG plant that you've all heard about on the Kenai can divert deliveries of gas from that production facility. And by them not taking that gas, it then becomes available for utility use. And here's the point. You know, these are all tools in our toolbox, and these are not untested for the most part. These are all things that, frankly, we have done over the years, one time or another, for some situation. So what I want to let you know is, as you hear discussion of this gas issue, the first thing that happens is that system operators look at the tools in their toolbox and take actions to address them. And heretofore, these have resolved all situations. But what if, and as the mayor has aptly pointed out, it's better to have a plan you don't need than to need a plan you don't have. And so this is sort of a picture of the plan. What if someday comes when we can't respond and take care of things? Well, then you might want to ask the public to help out. And what could the public do? Well, they could dial down their thermostats and turn down their water heaters and turn off unneeded lights and all of those other things. Well, where does that fit in the plan? Is that the first thing we ask people to do? No, because we read this chart from the top down. So the first thing is we do our things. Only if that's insufficient do we ask you all to help out. And only if those activities are insufficient do we get down here to interruptions. These are blackouts. This is the rolling blackout scenario you've heard talked about. And oh, by the way, does the whole town go dark? No. We've selectively identified those feeders, 1,000 customers or so apiece, that we're gonna, you know, move the mouse on screen and move the cursor on screen, push the mouse button, and open a breaker, and 1,000 customers lose power. And then about 20 minutes later, we open another breaker and another 1,000 customers lose power. And then we close that first breaker and those first 1,000 come back up. So how long are you out of power? Perhaps 20 minutes. And oh, by the way, we roll it around. If the room here is the greater area, sorry, Mayor, we're taking your table out. And now, you know, let me pick on someone else. Here we go. Bill over there, we're taking your table out. And now that Bill's out, we're turning you back on. And then we bounce it around. So does everybody lose power? Probably not, because you know what, Sarah? You guys are real critical down here. You're maybe a hospital. We're not turning you out. And somewhere, oh, my friends at MEA, you guys, you're the airport. We're probably not turning you out. So we do this selectively, right? But the point of that is, why do electric utilities do that? Why doesn't NSTAR, no problem, John, why doesn't NSTAR, you know, turn their customers out? Why is the electric utilities? Well, that's because we can do something that they can't. We can turn you off and we can turn you back on. We can do it all automatically, and really there's not a lot of harm to it. And I recognize there's certainly a great deal of inconvenience and other things, but in the greater scheme, much less harm from that than the NSTAR system losing pressure to your home. If that happens, there's no cursor and mouse button scenario. There's, hi, I'm here, I need to check your gas situation and relight you, and then to the neighbor, and that's a very lengthy process, and we don't want to get there. So interruptions, I want to stress, are a last resort. They have been thought out in advance by the different electric utilities, and the why would we do it? It's so that we can preserve pressure in the NSTAR system, because that is the scenario we do not want to get to. So I want you to understand this chart a bit and what goes into it, because quite often this is mischaracterized by folks as they say, well, we've got a gas problem. Oh my gosh, we're going to have rolling blackouts. Well, not necessarily. I mean, there's a hierarchy to these things, and that certainly isn't the first thing that would happen. And I will at this point say thank you for your attention. I'll turn it over to my friend Jim.
You're listening to a panel discussion on powering South Central Alaska in 2011 with Chugach Electric, Matanuska Electric Association, and Municipal Light and Power, recorded at the Anchorage Chamber of Commerce on Monday, October 25th. First, you heard from Phil Steyer, Director of Government Relations and Corporate Communications with Chugach Electric. His slideshow presentation is available at kska.org. Jim Posey, General Manager of Municipal Light and Power, approached the podium next, followed by Joe Griffith, General Manager of Matanuska Electric Association, Incorporated.
Municipal Light and Power is the municipal-owned utility that's been providing safe, reliable, and affordable power for over almost 80 years now. We currently serve an average of about 24,000 residential and about 6,000 commercial customers, in addition to providing all requirements to both military bases. Our thermal capacity consists of Hank Nichols plant, which is down here by Ship Creek for 90 megawatts, George M. Sullivan plant 2 at 219 megawatts, and the primary fuel for our gas-fired turbines is natural gas. And our gas is primarily supplied by the Beluga River unit, of which we are a one-third owner. Our hydro supplies of power is Bradley Lake. We get 31 megawatts, or 25.9% of that, down by Homer. And at Klutner, right up the road, that 44-megawatt project that's been there for a long time, we get 23.7 megawatts out of that. And that's how we provide 88% of our power is by natural gas, and 12% by hydro. Repowering plans. We're in stage two of our repowering. That is what Phil talked about, replacing our old 30, 40, 50-year-old turbines with new lightweight turbines that spin up faster, but also operate much, much more efficiently, 25 to 32%. Plant one, we're planning on adding another LM2500 plus for peaking at 32 megawatts. Plant two, one LM6000, similar to the ones, if not identical to the ones that we're doing with Chugach Electric at South Anchorage, a combined cycle gas providing about 57 megawatts, but that could be expanded if our conversations with MEA go firmly over the next couple of months, we could expand that and pick up a PPA with those guys, and that would make that plant a little bit larger. South Central Power Plant, which Phil talked about, 55 megawatts, and all of this is done with a lot of money. Our budget for next year, operating budget, is $137 million, and our capital improvement plan is $167 million. So it is not for the lighthearted. We drill wells over at Beluga, which take anywhere from $18 to $25 million per well. And I just signed an AFE for $60 million worth of compression in order to accelerate production out of Beluga so that we can try to keep that field producing at about 100 million a day. Our oil-fired generation, we have the capacity to cut over to liquid fuel if such action is needed. Fuel tanks at Plant 1 are being topped off to prepare for the possibility of a natural gas disruption this winter. And we have the fuel capacity at both plants to meet our native load. Joe, your time.
Well, back in 1947, when I was chair of the chamber. It was a real pleasure to stand up here and give a sermon. And I always kept two or three extras in my pocket just in case the speakers ran short or weren't there. Today I've got a good story for you, and Jim took about six of his slides out to give me more time to give my sermon up here. This energy challenge thing is huge for us, and here's what we face, we the communities, and it's not just these people up here, it's every single one of you out there, every one of you that owns a business or works in one, and that's the cost of our future energy supply. You've already heard Phil talk about the fuel supply for generation as being one of our challenges. And it's a major one for Matanuska Electric because I don't have any fuel on contract at all, and yet I must somehow come up with some fuel supply by 2015. You saw some of Jim's numbers there for the cost of the generation facilities. There's nothing inexpensive about these new facilities, and we don't have any choice but to replace them because they're old and worn out. And we have an aging and inadequate transmission system. And my bottom line on all of these is we need to start seriously thinking about them for one reason, and that's that the energy, the inexpensive energy that we have known for the past 40 years in Cook Inlet is what has made our economy. And if we don't have that and aren't able to provide that, the economy will suffer. Here's what the situation is in the rail belt. The combined load is about less than 900 megawatts. That may sound like a big number to you, but two city blocks in New York City are usually about the same size of load. So we're really very small by comparison points. And 67% of our generation is going to be retired inside the next 15 years. And we have to replace every bit of that. My friends from AEA and ADA did what was called a Rail Belt Integrated Resource Plan. And they came up with some very interesting numbers here. And they said that in order to get through, the generation projects through 2025, it's going to cost you a mere $13 billion. Where do you think that's going to come from? It's got to come from all our pockets, or we need some help in a real big hurry. Here are the generation projects that they suggested. Landfill, and MOA is working on one of those as we speak. In fact, I think the contract, if it hasn't been let, is imminent. I saw George out there. He probably knows the answer to that. Chugach MLNP gas plant, you've already heard about. Glacier Fork Hydro is out on the Kinnick River. Wind power, you've heard a lot about that recently. And there are three of those being considered in the rail belt. Golden Valley has one at Eva Creek. Homer has one called BQ Energy, I guess is the firm doing it, on the Kenai. And Siri, of course, is proposing the Fire Island project. They also suggested in this plan that we'd build another LM6000 in 2018, a large gas plant in Fairbanks in 2020, and by 2025, we would have had Chakachamna or Susitna online. It also talked about the transmission projects. Now, I took a little bit of a license here to select what I thought were the top five needing a lot of work, and that's over $600 million. Bernice Lake to International, Soldotna to Quartz Creek, Quartz Creek to University, and Quartz Creek is right north of Kenai Lake, Douglas to Teeland. That's Teeland is down on the Kinnick Goose Bay Road, and Douglas is at Willow. And that's an old line owned by Matanuska Electric and run at a higher voltage than it was originally built for. And then the Lake Loraine, which is Point McKenzie up to Douglas at Willow, would be a build around to strengthen the intertie to that level. So there's another $500 million or more. Well, let's talk a minute about who we are so we can get to questions. I dare say there will be a whole lot of questions out there. This is Matanuska Electric. Here's our service territory. It's about 100 miles east-west and 100 miles north-south. And of course, it runs up the Parks Highway, essentially, and up the Glen Highway, almost to be able to connect to Copper Valley Electric, about 5 miles short, just to the east of Sheep Mountain up there. It's a huge area, as you can imagine, and if you paid any attention to our problems a couple of 3 weeks ago during the windstorm, you can see why we had so much difficulty, as it's a huge area to cover. We have about 47,000 customers, 56,000 points of service, 125 miles of transmission line, almost 4,000 miles of distribution line, quite a bit of underground, 1,700 miles of underground line, and every day we're putting more in, particularly in the Eagle River area. We peak at about 145 megawatts. Last year we served almost 800,000 megawatt hours. We did $110 million in revenue last year, and our net plant for 2009 was $175 million. So we're a small entity serving a large area. We have an agreement with Chugach called the Tripartite Agreement, and they have provided all of our power for the last 20-some years. That agreement expires in December of 2014. It is the sole source of power today for MEA. Even the Bradley shares that we own come through the Chugach contract. And we must have a new source of power by January 1st, 2015, be that contract or in-house equipment. So here's our plans, what we're thinking about. We'll meet our generation needs as load followers with reciprocating engines. And you say, my goodness, you're going to step back and use old piston-type engines to do this? And there's a reason for it. Our load varies quite a bit, and these reciprocating engines have the ability to load follow better than the big turbines that work better fully loaded. I'm still trying to buy 50 megawatts from the rail belt system. And if that doesn't work, I don't have any choice, and I'll build all reciprocating engines to provide our load at the Eklutna facility. And that's just as you're driving out the Glen Highway. It's when you hit the last exit there, the Eklutna exit is just down the road from there. You could throw a rock from the highway to it. Here's what we're hoping happens on the transmission side of things. We certainly believe the static VAR compensators, and that doesn't mean much to anybody in here, but they're the components that let you ship high volumes of electricity on transmission lines without a high loss. There are three units on the Northern Intertie. They were put in there in 1984, so they're not new, and they've had inadequate maintenance because they are very costly, and they're at the point we need to replace them. We're hoping that we can get that underway this year, and I would toss that to my friends at AEA here. I'm sure Steve has that ready to go before he leaves, this weekend? Good, hope you get that project done. Teeland to Douglas reinsulation and upgrade. We're doing that today. That's the old 115 kV line that we're operating at 138,000 volts. And every chance we get, we put more insulators on there to keep the flashovers down. The Lorraine build around, I mentioned earlier, that's probably, Jim, $200 million project or so. So it's going to take a little more help to do that. That's the one from Point McKenzie up to Willow. And, of course, we'll have to build a substation at Point McKenzie to do that. A transmission substation is $15 million minimum, maybe more. And then currently we are designing the Teeland to Reddington. And that's Teeland is on the Kinnick Goose Bay Road. And that line will run southwest down Kinnick Goose Bay Road to about the Goose Bay area is essentially where Reddington is. And that upgrades our 34-5 line 215 kV. And we need that because the development in Matanuska Electric is all on the west side. Fuel supply, our hope is that we can find some CH4, that's natural gas for you scientists out there. And we hope to get it via the 20-inch NSTAR line because there is no other way to get gas to the Matsu Valley except via that line. You can't ship it from the east side to the west side. Someday we may solve that problem, but we aren't there yet. We also think LNG importation is coming, and heaven help us when we have to do it, but I don't think there are any of us that don't think it's going to happen. A backup emergency plan could be containerized LNG. You could actually run these engines we're talking about on a propane air system. They also are dual fuel, so you could run them on diesel, propane, LNG, anything of that nature. Diesel, of course, would run the price up to something like Fairbanks currently sees. The reason I show this map is to show you the problems we have with the gas system, and I suppose it's our own. We've known about this for many, many years. Tony and Jim and I used to walk around giving these horror stories about what might happen starting 10 years ago. Nobody paid any attention to us, but now we're here. This line can't get across to Anchorage. This is the 20-inch line right here. We would put our plant right up here. Plant 2 is right there, so we're to some degree competing for the same supply of gas. The SIGS line is the limiting factor into moving power back and forth, or gas back and forth across the inlet, because it's only one way this way. Now, there is a study underway to find out if we can move it both ways, and I certainly agree we should do that. And then the rest of these lines are feed lines that really get it up to Beluga, where the NSTAR line takes over, and that's also the Beluga power plant that Phil just briefed you on. We need a lot of work in that area. I'm hopeful that in the future we can make some of these fixes that are necessary. Everybody needs alternative power, and Phil has already mentioned that when he said we need to get off this dependence on gas, and I certainly agree with that. 10 years ago, we had a plan to convert to coal, put a plant in out west, fell on deaf ears. Had we done that, then we would be having a completely different discussion today. We are negotiating with Chugach regarding the wind power thing. Remember, Chugach takes all our power and turns it back to us. So whatever they work up with Siri, we will have some piece of it. To date, I don't think they've solved that problem as yet. Here's my favorites, the future hydro projects. Clearly we need what's called the Battle Creek diversion, and that would put an additional supply of water into Bradley Lake down on Kachemak Bay. It's worth about 50,000 megawatt hours, and that's a lot of power. The Chacachamnas who set in a go-forward determination must be made, and Steve, you can do that before you leave next Saturday. Fishhook is talked about as 2 megawatt capacity. That's out in our area. Glacier Fork was to be 75, and that is on the Kinnick River, about 25 miles southeast of Palmer. I think that's less likely to happen than some of these others, and I see Earl out there. He's working diligently on getting South Fork Hydro, and that'll be 1 megawatt or less. So I'm hopeful that he'll get those in place soon. Big challenges for us, financing. We're biting off a chunk that a small entity like us is gonna have trouble swallowing. So we gotta do some fancy footwork to figure out how to do that. As I mentioned, we don't have a fuel supply as yet. I'm talking to several independents about fuel. And I've talking to my friends here at this table about are we going to import LNG? I think we are. And schedule. We have to have all this ready to go under the circumstance today by 1 January 2015. So this is a challenge for all of us. And I'm sure we would all just be tickled pink to take a bunch of questions from you on these things. Thank you.
You are listening to Addressing Alaskans on KSKA Anchorage. This week's panel discussion on powering South Central Alaska in 2011 with Phil Steyer of Chugach Electric, Jim Posey from Municipal Light and Power, and Joe Griffith from Matanuska Electric Association was recorded at the Anchorage Chamber of Commerce on Monday, October 25th. All of their slideshow presentations are available at kska.org. Following a report from Anchorage Mayor Dan Sullivan on the results of this year's Energy Watch program, the panelists responded to questions from audience members.
At this time, before we get to your questions, I'd like to ask the mayor to come up here and provide his announcement.
Thank you, Bill. Bill said there was going to be a dramatic announcement, and so I had to think of something. I continue not to be a write-in candidate for any elective office. Well, we want to give the results today of the Energy Watch conservation effort that we tested again last Wednesday, the second year in a row that we've asked the public to participate in an exercise to see whether or not through voluntary efforts we could indeed take some pressure off the load in terms of our deliverability of natural gas. And for the second year in a row, we got very similar, very positive results. I think throughout the system, about a 2 to 4% average reduction. Difficult to measure truly scientifically, but natural gas, we measure kind of before and after on the consumption trend lines. And on the electric side, conservation is measured by analyzing actual kilowatts used during the test and comparing those figures against same time, prior and post day usage. So we can get fairly accurate with this, but again, it's not exact. But again, we're happy with the results, and we followed up the results with a survey done by the Hayes Group, which showed that about 69% of the people were aware of a possible Cook Inlet natural gas deliverability problem. About 55% of the people were aware of the Energy Watch campaign, and about 33% said that they participated in the test. So those are good numbers. That shows that there is awareness, that people are willing to help. And when you're just doing it as a test when there's not a problem and get those kind of numbers, that's good, because if there really was a problem and we did sound out a more immediate alarm, we think the numbers would rise dramatically. So for all of you that participated, I thank you. We had the Chamber of Commerce and groups like BOMA, the Building Owners and Managers Association. They got the word out to their members, and the utilities did a great job as well. NSTAR, Chugach, MLMP, MEA, Homer Electric, through utility bills and other announcements, did a great job getting the word out to the public. I also want to thank the governments of Mat-Su and the Kenai Peninsula and our own office of the city of the Office of Emergency Management. So great coordinated effort, and I want to thank again everyone for their participation. And we're going to continue to do it in the years going forward, because I think, as Phil mentioned particularly, it's not the first choice on our list of options when there's a deliverability problem, but it's one that could be important, and we want to make sure the public stays aware. So again, thank you. Thanks, Bill.
Glad to hear you're not a write-in candidate. I'm going to write in, I think, Chad Hansen on my ballot. I like that honesty approach. We do have some questions, and proving once again that the Anchorage Chamber crowd doesn't pull any punches with his questions. This first one is to all three of the companies. Why do we have three companies for such a small population?
We shouldn't. We should have one G&T company supplying it all, and that actually is what's underway in considerations right now. Whether or not we could ever get my friend Jim to be a member of that remains to be seen, but I think the rest of us co-ops are headed huckley buck in that direction. So we would have a single generation and transmission entity to handle all of these rough questions about where does the power come from.
And we would be a strong partner.
All right. Here's a tough question for Joe. Is MEA an intervener and objecting to the NSTAR gas storage project? And if so, why?
Yeah, we're an intervener. And the reason I intervened is because the request was for an expedited process. And I think expedited processes on something as new to us as storage is the wrong way to go. And my demand, I do not oppose it. I'm not even a participant in it. And I told the head of NSTAR this, the reason I intervened was because it was moving too fast and we need to ensure there's a complete record. If there isn't a complete record, there will be a sector of our support base, if you will, who will say, well, we solved that problem. And in reality, we've done nothing for that problem. All we've done is created a hole in the ground where we could put some gas if we can find some. So it doesn't take the pressure off of us at all. And I just want to be sure that's on the record.
For all three utilities, what are your policies and views with respect to on-site customer-generated power and interconnection with the utility grid?
Chugach, the general interconnection issue can be broken up into smaller pieces. One piece is called net metering, and the Regulatory Commission adopted a ruling on that last year that applies to all three of our utilities and several others in Alaska. And basically, it allows interconnection to the grid, allows the customer to self-generate and offset their own usage. Certain technologies are what are allowed under a certain sized generation limit. And beyond what you use yourself, you can sell back to the grid at basically the cost it would cost the utility to make power. That's net metering. There are provisions for, at least in the Chugach tariff, for larger sales, larger size generator sales to us, and all of those things are already covered in our tariff. So our policy is if you meet the requirements of the tariff, you can execute the deal.
We file tariffs also for the same.
Same here.
All right. Joe touched on this in his presentation, but I guess so we can get everybody on the record, what are your thoughts regarding the need to import LNG from foreign sources in order to keep the lights on past 2013?
Well, as a vertically integrated utility that produces gas, I can tell you the gas volumes are going down. And if we don't discover a major gas field 2 years ago or a year ago, we are going to need to import gas. So that tells you that by 2013, 2014, I don't expect, unless there's some kind of miracle, for us to have enough native gas at peak periods, when the peak periods will start growing, in order to meet those needs going out into the future. So we have responsibly started looking at it and studying it, and hopefully we'll within a year have a plan for how we're going to do it.
And if you recall my slide where I showed gas volumes under contract or expected to be, when you get out to that part of the slide where there are unmet needs, sort of all options are on the table.
Okay. With respect to Fire Island, if we want to move to renewables, why aren't we jumping on Fire Island? And if it's just, if it isn't just today's cost, isn't power more important than tomorrow's price?
Chugach is in negotiations with SERI over Fire Island, so I'm not going to say a lot about that particular project. I will go back to my statement earlier where I said we're considering renewables, but it's not renewables at any price. It's what are the conditions, what's the cost, and at the end of the day, does it make economic sense for customers? Those are the things we look at in evaluating sort of all these renewable projects that people are bringing to us on a fairly regular basis.
Renewable energy is not cheap. Without the state, basically the AEA program for bringing renewable energy into Alaska and the rural areas, buying down the capital costs to 80% of the cost of buying it down to zero capital cost, it's very expensive to bring it into the system. Right now, the Chugach price being offered is 9 cents, which is above what it takes for us to generate power. But when you add on from the WebEx that we had the other day, another 10 cents, 11 cents on top of it per kilowatt, it becomes difficult to analyze how to bring it in. Hopefully we can do it cheaper. We'll all be working to that extent. We've all paid for some analysis being done by EPS, and hopefully they can give us some answers that will help us resolve this. And I think Golden Valley is involved in trying to solve the problem also.
Well,
Bradley Lake would never have happened if AEA hadn't stepped in and gave us the money for half of it. Today, it's the cheapest large source in the state of Alaska. That shows you how well it works. The number, the 13 billion number I threw up on the slide, 4 to 5 billion of that is for a Susitna level project. So you can see what those things cost. There's not all of us utilities together could never afford that. And you heard Jim's numbers on Fire Island Wind. Renewables are not free and they're not cheap.
Tough question for Mr. Posey. Do you foresee a day when MLNP will become non-government owned, a la ATU? Could it work and work well? What are the pros and cons?
I'll look over at the mayor about that one. You know, right now we pay the city 10 to 13.
I think it was the mayor asked that question.
That was a good one. $10 to $13 million, I think, in next year's budget, we're going to pay to the city $16 million. I maintain that as an independent, not an independent, but an operating utility, we are a better resource for the city than if it was sold. But I maintain that by having, 40-some years working in the private industry and 10 years working for government, actually 14 years now working for government. As a public utility commissioner, I watched the utilities up in Fairbanks being sold. That was mine. I actually was the utility commissioner who managed the one for the ATU sale. So therefore, I know a lot about what you can and cannot do by selling a utility. People have come and sniffed, but nobody's come up with the real cost that they were willing to pay. And if that happens, I used to work for ARCO. And the chairman told me everything we had was for sale at the right price. And nobody has offered the right price.
I guess in fairness, we should have an individual question for Chugach. So, Phil, who should have secured alternate gas supply options when Marathon terminated its contract on September 30th? Chugach or NSTAR? And I guess why?
I don't think I'm going to answer that. I don't have a good answer to that one.
Fair enough.
I don't know.
Well, here's one. Should this, you guys have discussed this, but as a last question, should the state provide low interest loans for renewables as high capital cost and help Fire Island, South Fork, and many others? I imagine the answer, but go ahead anyway.
I sit on the committee appointed by the governor, and that's what we do as part of that. There's set ways for and standards, and I think it's working very well. So the answer, yes.
Yes.
Yeah, the state has a renewable energy fund, and I believe all our utilities supported the creation of that fund and the ongoing capitalization of it by annual appropriations by the legislature.
Well, please join me in a round of applause for today's panelists.
You've been listening to Addressing Alaskans on KSKA with Phil Steyer, Director of Government Relations and Corporate Communications with Chugach Electric, Joe Griffith, General Manager of Matanuska Electric Association, Incorporated, and Jim Posey, General Manager of Municipal Light and Power. They participated in a panel discussion on Powering South Central Alaska in 2011, recorded at a meeting of the Anchorage Chamber of Commerce at the Dena'ina Center in Anchorage on Monday, October 25th, 2010. You can download today's program or subscribe to free podcasts of Addressing Alaskans on our website at kska.org, where you can also find links to all of the local groups featured on the show each week. To let us know about an upcoming community event that you would like to hear on Addressing Alaskans, just go to kska.org and click on Contact Us at the bottom of the page. This has been a production of KSKA Public Radio in Anchorage, Alaska. For KSKA, I'm Kristen Spack. Thanks for listening.